Join the Pop Life Podcast conversation. Follow us on Twitter at The Pop Life Podcast. Find us on iTunes at The Pop Life Podcast. Be sure to rate us, please. And find us on SoundCloud and share and like and subscribe. Thanks.
Welcome to the Pop Life Podcast, coming to you from the Crosby Collective Studio, starring your hosts, Jeffrey Sledge, Naima Cochran, and Sean Young. If it's top of mind in pop culture, it's up for discussion. Thank you for joining us this week. The Pop Life begins in 3, 2, 1.
All right, Pop Life Podcast today is, Jesus Christ, the fourth, is it the ninth? Maybe?
Hey, were you about to say the fourth?
No, I was saying four of the month.
It's the ninth. It's the ninth.
4-9. Okay, okay.
Yeah.
I wasn't that far off. I mean, literally.
Who can tell, literally.
Yeah, exactly. Who can tell? And honestly, who cares? Who gives a shit what day it is? What the day it is?
Well, Easter weekend is this weekend.
Is it though? I mean, I know it is, but is it? You know what I mean? Like, it is, but you know.
It's still Easter. I will be honest. Like, Holy Week, this week, starting with Palm, I forgot it was Palm Sunday on Sunday until like 1 o'clock in the afternoon. And it definitely is like, this is usually I'm usually really all into Holy Week. Obviously, it's the most sacred week on the Christian calendar. But, mm-hmm. like, the story of Easter, the spirit of Easter, the message of Easter, I love it. You know, reset, rejuvenation, yeah. everything. And it's also always around my birthday. My birthday's next Friday, next Thursday. Yeah. My birthday's yeah. next Thursday. So it's like, but I just, this week, this has also been the first week where I've been feeling a little discombobulated by this whole mm-hmm. thing. Mm-hmm. And I think it's because, like, towards the latter half of this week, in my world, people started trying to figure out, okay, how are we adjusting to the new normal? So all of a sudden I have work to do again. And the idea of like trying to work and have meetings and have deadlines and all that other shit in the midst of this just feels off. Like I feel like if I'm gonna be in the house, I should just be in the house bullshit. And like, you want me to actually be functional?
Yeah.
While we ain't doing shit? You know what I mean? It's just, it's very like the, it clashes. Like it doesn't fit.
Yeah. And I know there are certain, you know, businesses and industries that are still going, especially, you know, in the entertainment, you know, television, you know, like me and Brog talked yesterday about, you know, they're still doing a lot of production, obviously with their company and stuff. Yeah. And I mean, you know, a bunch of others too, because that's kind of one of the few industries, you know, I didn't say few, but that is one of the industries that's kind of semi-holding people together is the right. fact that you can watch television and watch movies and you use it as an escape. But I also feel like in what kind of watching some other people, and I'm not trying to, let me preface this by saying, I'm not trying to minimize or downplay anybody's occupation, but also feel like, and this is a good thing, I guess, a lot of people whose companies are still working, it's almost like it's almost like this busy work.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. because like, you know what, we still got to pay. We got to pay y'all because we got to give something to do. You know, and again, I'm not trying to just downplay right. anything, but for a lot of y'all, it's like, and it's something to kind of distract you from your day. Right. But you know, but whereas in other cases, there are, you know, I mean, there's still Con Ed. There's right. still, you know, people still got to have light and heat and air and gas and like I said, the entertainment is around right. for people to. And you know, people need their car fixed. It's still, but it's just like you said. You know, I'm just saying all to say, it is weird to kind of be like working when it's like, yo, like the world is literally falling apart.
Right, and also like when you don't know. One of the things I've been very resistant to is having conversations about planning just for the sake of fucking having conversations about planning. Right.
Yeah.
Because like, I'm like, we don't even know what fall is gonna look like.
Yeah. Summer's done.
Y'all want to talk to me about some shit in August? It doesn't make any sense. If we're not talking 2020, even if we are talking 2021, like I was helping an organization out with a concert that they were supposed to do in May, and now they want to table it till 2021 TBD.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a concert that's going to be held at a church. It's a gospel concert. It's going to be held at a church. So the other day, they hit me, one of the women I was working with hit me, and she was like, you know, she's checking on me. She's like, how's everything doing? And I mentioned to her, I was like, there's a lot of fake planning conversations. Mm. So I was like, it's like Monopoly money. Like, people.
That's what I meant.
Maybe it'll be this, that. And I was like, I hate that. I would rather not do it. I know, I said, I understand people not feeling like they can just sit still and needing to have like a plan of motion. I was like, but it's really kind of futile. And she was like, no, I understand that. And then 5 minutes later, she's like, so can we get on the phone and talk about the concert? I was like, talk about what? Like, what are we going to talk about? We can't get no, the church is closed. We can't get no dates. Like,
and honestly, like, not trying to be this guy, right. But I mean, I'm going to say it but we don't even know who's going to be here.
Hello.
2021. Like, some people might not make it.
Seriously. When my actual church wanted to talk about rescheduling the cotillion next year, I was like, I don't even know if these kids are going to be in school in the fall. If they're going to be held back. And they got to be, how are we recruiting? Churches are closed. Schools are closed. Like, who are we reaching out to talk about cotillion? Like, that doesn't make any sense. Like, I've just kind of been like, y'all, I do think for some people, and Sean, you may agree here, for some people, I think that it's a way to maintain a sense of
normalcy,
mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. Like, we need to act like there's some kind of business as usual, but it's not business as usual. It is not business as usual. There is no, we don't know what business as usual is going to be moving forward. So it's like, it's one thing to say, okay, like in the case of the Shabazz Center, we're now trying to figure out what we can do in terms of virtual programming. That's a conversation to have.
Yeah.
But let's have this conference call about some in-person event that's happening in a future TBD. That to me is stupid. I just don't.
I agree and disagree just a little bit. Like, I agree with you that, yes, I think that having, you know, conference calls for the sake of having conference calls, yes, that is a part of people feeling a need to have a certain rhythm in their day and a rhythm in their business.
Yeah.
And that's kind of, they're trying to give some level of normalcy in the most abnormal event of our lifetime, right? And so, yes, you're going to have people that, you know, also you have people that it's their job to plan. It's in their nature to make, to have, you know, plan A, plan B, plan C. What do we do if this happens? What do we do if that happens? Mm-hmm. See, the problem with all of this is that you don't want to be caught with your pants down when this shit lifts.
That's true, but we also just have no idea. You're putting, and I get that, and I understand that, but I guess my thing is also, when we really don't know the magnitude, it's like, it's hard to plan for contingencies when you have absolutely no idea what the contingencies may be.
That's, and listen, that's fair, but if you are, but for example, if you're a business owner, right, like, you have to be nimble.
Yeah.
You have to adapt to some level of this, and you have to try and plan ahead, right? Like, how, when this happens, you don't want to be the restaurant who didn't have a contingency plan for when the influx of people come in, right? Like, that's the other part of this. And so, yes, but listen, I think that, do you want to have a conversation about what those next steps are? I think an email trail is more than sufficient. We don't need to be on a 2-hour conference call to talk about, you know, who might be doing, like, dude, like, the people you might be trying to book right now, like, people that you thought were out of your price range will probably be in your price range come next year.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Like that's real shit for Tory. Okay.
Right. Well,
that's real.
But the other thing that's hard from an events perspective. So, for example, I happen to know that the booking agencies and touring companies, they're doing like daily calls right now, right? Because the landscape is shifting daily. And when we come out of this, there's going to be a whole question of, like, for example, first, how much are we going to be able to relax on social distancing at any point until for the next year, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, are you even going to be able to book shows at your venue? Yeah. If you do, are you gonna, how do you sell every other seat? Do you have to sell every other seat, and then do you have to sell every other seat in every other row? Like, you're gonna basically have your venues at quarter capacity at most.
Yeah.
What does that look like? How do you ticket that? How do you price those tickets? Nobody's gonna have any money. You know what I mean? Like, there's so, like, artists on tour bus, like, there's so many things, so many moving parts. Then I'm like, I get it. We need to keep an eye on it, and we need to watch how things are evolving. But there's just so many unknowns that when people want to talk to me about a show in July, I'm like,
yeah, I mean,
I can't even have a conversation. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, I don't know. What are you
talking about? But to me, that's the part of that is, hey guys, we want to, you know, listen, for us, there are certain things that are obviously on the forefront of what we're doing, and then there are things that are on the back burner. So during this particular time, we had a chance to go back and dust off some things that may have been on the back burner, right? And you can kind of get a leg up a little bit, and you can kind of go back and maybe revisit some things. You know, if you're a producer, like, you should be coming out of this quarantine with maybe some new ideas, maybe some new, you know, who knows?
Some new pitches and stuff,
Who knows? Yeah. And even if you're a record producer, right? Like, you've gotten 3 weeks of verses. You know what I'm saying? You've gotten some information or whatever the case might be. And listen, if you've been sitting in your pajamas because you think the world is going to end, that's perfectly fine too. No one's, you know,
exactly.
There's no shot at anyone for doing that. But I think there are people who are looking at this as the time of, you know, not overworking themselves, but definitely wanting to be prepared, because they're going to be, again, like you said, because there's no end in sight, which means this could happen in 2021, or this shit could happen in 2 months. This shit could happen in June. Like, if we take the cues from Spain and Italy and Wuhan and China and those places, like, we start to see that we're in the week of the peak, so to speak. Right. And then we're going to, and then
hopefully we'll get a little flattening.
That's what I was going to say. And so what will happen is, look, I don't think it's going to be like, you know, like they lifted up the gates. It's not going to be like Black Friday, you know what I'm saying, when niggas is just running.
Right.
But there's,
well, that's what I think people don't understand.
Yeah. It's definitely going to
circle back.
Yes.
You know, so my thing is
preparedness. Sorry, Jeff. Preparedness is one thing. Denial is another. I'm all about preparedness. Yes. I'm not about the denial.
And so I think that line is thin. Line. And I think that line is super thin right now.
Yeah,
it's wild thin.
Really, really thin. And also the other thing too is, like, a lot of other people, man. And you know, this isn't a shot, but a lot of people throw themselves into their work to the degree that they don't have an identity. They don't do anything outside of work. And so this is such a part of their life.
That
they don't really know how to not do this. And I mean, you know, from older people, I saw an old couple today at the bank. Now, Miss Gladys and Mr. Willie ain't had no need to be down to the bank.
To be at the bank.
Okay, I had to give Miss Gladys and Mr. Willie some gloves, because they ain't had no gloves. Mr. Willie
had no gloves.
Mask on.
Nothing. They just out here.
And they my folks. I know them people. I didn't know them people.
They done been to the store. They done been to the store. They done been to the bank.
Down to the store. Down to the bank.
Yeah. All that. You know, they putting the S on the end of everywhere they went. You know, so, but God bless them. But I say all I have to say, like, people don't, you know, some people, particularly those that are of a certain age, you know, you've been in your industry 15, 20 years. This is kind of a routine.
It's
kind of what you do. You know, if you're a trainer, this is what you do. You know, it's like, I know these athletes are going crazy. They're creatures of habit.
Oh, crazy.
They got no schedule. You know,
They got no schedule. And working out at the crib, even for an athlete who would have a nice, you know, assumingly have a nice gym set up and all that. Even with that, it still ain't the same, because there ain't no trainer there.
And from my experience, like, you know, I'm blessed enough to have that space to work out in. It's not motivating. It's not. It's just not. You know what I'm saying?
Not.
Like, you're
it's not the same as packing your shit, getting in your car, going to the gym. It ain't the same, bro.
The only person I've ever seen with a complete gym, like a fucking gym, like, this nigga got Planet Fitness, is The Rock. That's the only motherfucker that I've ever seen with a complete, his shit might be like 3,000 square feet, bro. Like, he's got a legitimate, full-blown,
He got Equinox at the crib.
Nigga, there's no exercise that Dwayne Johnson wants to do that he cannot do in that space.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, yeah. So I want to just mention this interesting article. I don't know if y'all got a chance to read it. I read it today. It was about the kind of high, and I guess this happened in a lot of cities, but New York, because it's happening probably more because of the you know, the amount of cases and stuff here, and the exodus of the population, of the high-end population here. So there's an article that the New York Post wrote about the stores, like we have stores here called like Morton Williams, yep. You know, Gristiti's, you know, Dean and DeLuca, like these kind of high-end grocery-ish stores. They're not, but they're not grocery stores in a traditional sense. They're
specialty stores.
Specialty grocery stores, so very high-end stuff, very organic stuff. And those stores are getting crushed because they always are in very, you know, high-end neighborhoods. So in New York, that would be up side. Central Park area, Tribeca, Soho area, and all of those people pretty much have left
the city.
People
who live there have left, and the people who usually
people who live there
go through there as part of their commute home, aren't in the city.
Exactly.
Like I used to go to Whole Foods and Time Warner all the time, and I haven't been below 160th Street in a month. So it's like, you know,
and why would you?
Right.
Yeah, like, and why would you? You know.
Right.
Yeah. So those stores and like the kind of you know, the local stores that those areas support, like the cleaners and the nail salons and that type of thing. Those stores are getting crushed. But this article is basically about the supermarkets, and so it was very interesting because the guy who owns Gristiti's, he's quoted in the article, and he actually stayed in the city. He's got enough money to leave, of course. We had to stay. And he said when he walks around at night and he looks up at all the high rises, they're black. Yeah. Because literally no one is there. Right. No one is there. Everybody's going to the Hamptons or, you know, up to Vermont or wherever, the Aspen, or wherever they have homes and second homes and stuff to live.
Berkshires.
So the Berkshires, all that shit. So they're gone, right? So these and so what's happening now is the suppliers of the stores are not even bringing stuff to them. Because they're like, y'all ain't selling.
Right.
So we got to take it to the areas where people are selling, which tend to be the kind of mid to lower income areas where people have enough money to maybe still shop, but don't have enough money to like leave, right?
Right.
So those stores are also getting killed because they said, now you go in those stores and there's like literally nothing on the shelves. Because once it's gone, it's kind of gone because nobody's coming back. And then the other side of it, the flip side of it is on the very kind of lower end stores, like up in the Bronx or some of the other places that are a little further out in Brooklyn, what's happening is that everybody panicked early in those neighborhoods. And these are pretty much kind of, you know, and again, no disrespect to anybody, like, you know, lower income, you know, working class and some, you know, not working class people. And so they all bought shit like, what, 3 weeks ago or so? Everybody went crazy. And I don't have no money,
right?
Because they're not working. So now those stores are like empty. So they got these supermarkets that like they got stuff, but like people are kind of waiting on their first of the month checks and all that stuff. And now that stuff's kind of coming slow because of everything. So now it's this kind of weird thing where these it's kind of the tale of two cities, where it's like the high end people are gone, and the thing about it with the high end people, more than likely they ain't coming back to at least September.
Right.
Because school's out. Because they don't be here this summer anyway. And then school's out. So there's no reason for you to come back before that, especially with what's going on here in the city. Like, why would you come back if you could live in the Berkshires by the beach? Like, what the fuck are you coming back here for? So these stores got to try to maintain for the next, like, 5 months.
Because they also don't have nobody. They also don't have tourists in Midtown. They all don't have any of that.
So none of that.
You noticed the other day, I went to the store on the third or fourth, and I noticed that the stores up by me, they were, I kept telling y'all, I told y'all on the show and I was telling the guys in text, every time I went to the store, because the first few days before the shutdown, I was going to the store every day, because every day I was like, let me go pick up.
Yeah.
Let me go get.
Sidebar, thank you for that tip, because I've been going to that C-Town, and they got
a problem. They were keeping, every time I would go to a store, there'd be a truck outside.
Yeah,
the
because those are the suppliers that are going to a store, so they know that they got constant business.
So I noticed, I didn't go to that C-Town, because that C-Town, by me, has been closing at 8, but there's a Superfood Town, like the one on 145th Street. There's one on 160th Street that's relatively new. Superfood Town, and for the first time, I noticed Superfood Town's shelves were a little bit bare. I think, though, it was because I got there at that point between the first of the month rush and like stock delivery. But it was the first time since all of this kicked off that I noticed like there wasn't as much produce. Some things were completely missing. Like all the juice was gone. All the fucking juice was gone.
Wow.
So I don't know if they were like all the refrigerated juice.
That's not true.
So I don't know if they were like letting their supply run down, because some of these stores may have overstocked. So I don't know if they were letting their supplies run down or if it was a first of the month rush and they hadn't restocked yet. But I found that interesting because those two stores, like anytime I went in them, they were fully stocked all the time.
So I mean, yeah. So bro, with the markets out that way, how is it?
Well, they've been pretty good. I have three tiers of supermarkets. We kind of have, it's sort of the same thing. We have a higher end, you know, obviously you have your Whole Foods. I would kind of consider King's sort of a specialty. It's you know, King's is a Wegmans. A Wegmans actually I went to today. One of the families in my neighborhood, you know, older folks, they just couldn't, they terrified, man, can't get out. One of the ladies suffers from Parkinson's.
Wow.
So, I went and did their grocery shopping today, and went to Wegmans. So definitely going to Wegmans again.
Okay.
But, all in all, there hasn't really been much of a shortage. I mean, you had the initial ridiculous rush, but
yeah,
you know, now when you go in, you know, you're not going to get Scott's tissue, but there'll be toilet paper there. You know, it'll be an off-brand.
Yeah,
It's that sort of thing that's happening. You know, some things you can't, you're not really going to get. But, you know, that's because, when that stuff comes out, man, it's just gone.
Like wipes and stuff like that.
Or like very lean cuts of beef. That's going to be gone.
Okay.
So, you know, woe is me. I got to eat 80-20 beef split. You know?
Yeah. Yeah.
But all in all, there hasn't really been much of a shortage. There's a really, really huge ShopRite in my town.
Okay.
And that is where, so I try to avoid that as much as possible. That's usually what they would normally do even before the pandemic is, they take seniors there, all the neighboring towns. They load the seniors up on the little jitney buses, take them,
that's dope.
Them shopping. Yeah, because it's a great supermarket. It's a really great supermarket. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, there's a bus stop there, so then you have the employees there. So it could get a little overwhelming at that ShopRite.
I got
so
you. It's a lot going on.
It's a lot going on. It's a lot of time. You know what? I can afford to go to King's. King's is a little more expensive. But it's going to be less crowded. People are far more conscious about social distancing. Everybody's got on a mask. Everybody's wiping their shit down.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you go to some supermarkets and I saw way too many old folks out there today, man, with nothing, no protection.
With nothing, just out here.
Just out here. And getting bullshit. Like, they wasn't stocking up. Like, Earl, you don't need to come out here for no fucking quarter orange juice. I have one fucking quarter. I'm like, dude, what are you doing out here?
Yeah, yeah. You got that from a local bodega or whatever.
On, you very need
got that from the 7-Eleven, Earl. Come on now.
But all in all, there's no real shortage, and there's no real shortage of it doesn't seem like the workers are being terminated or let go or that.
Yeah, supermarket workers are probably making paper.
They won't have as many because I know the supermarkets around here fewer workers. Shorter hours because
they're closing earlier
at the time.
Yeah,
but definitely still there for sure. Yeah.
So it's interesting. That article was just interesting because it's one of those things you don't quite think about. Like it's all these little. I don't want to call it little because that's not the right term, but all these kind of small kind of things. The ripple effect of all this is like going to affect so many things that I don't think we're quite wrapping our minds around, like stuff like that, like, oh, the supermarkets.
I mean, a big part
all of these businesses closing down or whatever.
A big part of those supermarkets also is the markup, man. Like, the markup in those supermarkets are phenomenal.
Yeah, like, amazing.
Like, what would normally cost, say, $350 in mm-hmm. a Target, or, you know, $375 in a ShopRite. Like, you go to those stores, man, and that shit'll be almost $6.
Easy.
Like, easy. Because mm-hmm. people, because people who can afford to
shop, they just grabbing. Them. Yeah, they just didn't. You're not looking at coupons, and you're just grabbing shit, throwing
and,
in the cart.
And you're not really focusing in on price. Like, that's kind of how yeah. it is at King's. Like, King's is not a discount supermarket. There's not a lot of 4-4-2. There's not a lot of those signs there.
Yeah. So it's like, just get the shit and go. So, I mean, yeah, I just wanted to kind of mention that. I mean, and, you know, again, always everybody, you know, stay safe out here. And, you know, Andrew Cuomo says that he, all indications are that the peak of this in this area is coming soon. He also says something very interesting, which is like the peak here is coming soon, but the peaks are going to be happening in different times around the country. So, like, we might be
in California going to be
exactly
because we've been the worst back. So we had our worst. Us and New Jersey, Sean, we had our most deadly day on record on Monday.
Yeah.
We may have already topped that yesterday or today. Or we may have topped that yesterday. I don't know. But I know Monday was the state's most deadly day. Mm-hmm. Basically, it equated a few people dying every 30 minutes or something.
Yeah, it was insane.
And
yeah.
we've already toppled, our deaths have already toppled the numbers of September 11th. But the good news is that If like you said, if we're at the peak, which we should be based on how far we are behind Italy, we should mm-hmm. be at the peak. And I was telling people this last week when they were trying to do all that fake plan. And I was like, y'all wait for us to ride out next week. And then, because I was like, we haven't peaked yet.
We don't know
yet how long. Like, just Monday, shelter in place was extended to April 30th. You know what I mean?
Yeah, so
I was
like, don't know yet
how long things are going to last. So let's get at least to the point where we know we're at the other side of the peak, and then we may have an idea. But I think based on Italy, this is our peak week. But what concerns me is that New York is a city. Well, first of all, like you said, in other parts of the country, we still got governors who are just like
wild,
whatever.
Yeah, wild.
Right. But also in New York, the possibility of not being able to really slow the spread, because we have so many essential workers and, you know, service workers mm-hmm. who
taking the train every day,
and the train is running on reduced service, so the trains are still crowded, mm-hmm. and people who live in multi-generational homes. I just think that our risk until there's a vaccine, I think New York will always be a city at high risk.
You also I was going to piggyback that and say, because and we've been talking about this already, but I posted a couple of videos and this other stuff where it's like, you know, a lot of people in, you know, areas are still not staying inside, and it's not even really warm here. So right. I feel like I'm scared that when it hits that 75, 80 degrees kind of every day-ish thing, which is usually about 3 weeks to a month from now, May, when it kind of starts to...
It'll be June-ish before
June-ish, yeah. Yeah, May will be kind of funny, but, like, when it just starts to kind of break and you get those kind of warm days, those kind of nice nights, like, I just don't see cats in Harlem or cats out in Bed-Stuy or cats out in Jamaica, Queens, sitting in the damn house. Like, I just don't see it.
Best case scenario, they'll be on the sidewalk in lawn chairs, but they won't be distancing.
They won't be distancing is what I'm saying. They won't be distancing.
And they do that because it's often a lot of people. It's a big family in a small apartment.
Yeah.
You don't have the room.
Yeah,
you don't have the space. You know what I mean? Like, you literally don't have the space. And in the summertime, that's difficult. And I sympathize with that. I get it. And it's really kind of like as some people are saying, even social distancing is privileged. To say stay in your house, shelter in place is privileged when, you know, you got you, your grandma, like my upstairs neighbors, it's husband, wife, grandmother, grandfather, and two kids.
Yeah.
And
what's that, a two-bedroom?
They're in a two-bedroom.
Yeah, so
I'm like,
there you go.
There's a lot of y'all niggas up there. And they seem to bring their activities out into the hallway, which I get because, like, y'all ain't got room.
You see space, yeah. So, you know, praying for everyone. I ain't going to get it in your man Donna Khan's press conference. I can't handle it.
I can't hear. We just never talk talk about.
Yeah, just before. So just on one last thing, kind of a politics thing, Bernie Sanders today officially dropped out of the race. So Joe Biden will be the candidate on the Democratic side. And I just have to say, and I think we've talked about this before, that, you know, there's a lot of people on Twitter today. And I know in the big picture, that's a very small percentage of people, but there's a lot of people on Twitter today complaining about, oh, why we gotta vote for Joe, and damn, what's this fucked up, and da, da, da. And it's like, yo, man, like, we talked about this a few weeks ago on this podcast, your man lost. Like, yeah, like, he didn't get cheated, like, he didn't, right, nobody did no slick shit, y'all didn't vote, in a lot of cases, the voting percentages were extremely low across the board, yeah, but really low, obviously, on Bernie's side, because y'all lost. So, like, at this point, I saw somebody today, I'll leave him nameless, say, yo, man, why are we gonna, you know, vote for another old white guy? I was like, well, you know what?
We're still gonna vote for another old white guy.
But we know we had all kind of candidates before them.
Yeah. Exactly.
We had black women. We had an Asian cat. We had all kind of people you could have voted for before. We had, you know, had Amy Klobuchar. We had Cory Booker. But y'all wanted to, like, follow the box and, you know, fall in line with the bullshit, or she's the cop, or he's this, he's that. And we whittled it down to these two people, which are two old white guys. One, actually, your candidate is actually older than Joe.
Exactly.
You know what I'm saying? And now you're complaining that we have to vote for old white guy again. And again, you know, Bernie did ignore it. I still do not understand why Nina Turner would allow this. I read an article about it saying that she kind of tried to put up a fight and kind of fell in line. And Bernie's, very, very stubborn, so he don't listen. Yeah, but he ignored black people.
Again.
They thought that the white people and Latinos could carry them through and ignored the black vote.
And then finally tried to get in touch with the black people, he fucking recruited Jesse Jackson.
Jesse Jackson, who, you know, God bless him. We don't care about Jesse at this point.
Nobody cares about Jesse. And the funny thing about Jesse, this is why I didn't get about the Sanders campaign, and I said this about Twitter, is A, the fact that he ignored all the same black people that complained about him ignoring him the first time, specifically black people in the
South.
Specifically. He had some surrogates down there, but he did not go.
Nope.
And for black and for black people in the South, people feel like this is, folks like to criticize them for being uninformed. It's not about being uninformed. It's, I'm going to trust the devil I know before the devil I don't.
That's all it is.
But that's what it is. It's not saying that Biden
is going to
be perfect. No. But I know that. I know him.
Exactly.
I don't know you.
I don't know you at all. Joe been over here for Thanksgiving now.
Right.
You know, your boy the pie. So
we know Joe. But yeah, at least we know what kind of shit Joe going to do.
Now, Joe did hug my niece a little too long now. I ain't like that. But they did bring the pie, and they came here, and he sat down, and he said grace and all that. So that Burning Man, and I ain't never seen him before, so yeah, we ain't voting for him. And it's literally, it's a joke, but it really ain't.
But it's
ain't,
real. That's what
it's literally that simple.
And my thing is, you did it 4 years ago. You got backlash about it. You complained about it. 4 years later, you do it again. So from my perspective, and I tweeted this, I was like, the old black Southerner in me,
mm-hmm,
and who was raised by old black Southerners, understands, you decline my invitation once, I'm a feel away. You decline my invitation twice,
you kiss my
ass.
Yeah.
That's it.
Period.
I'm offended.
And again, but, I don't understand. Again, I wasn't involved. I don't know anything. But like, Nina Turner, like, I mean, that should have been the first thing she did, was correct the mistake of 16.
Exactly.
That should have been the first thing.
To pull out the binder from 16, but he was doing all the same things. He would pivot away from discussions about race to class. Like, all the same mistakes. It's like he just pulled the binder out and just followed the same playbook, same script.
Kept leaning on him, marched for Dr. King a couple of times back in the 60s.
Just sub Simone out for Nina. And then when they brought Jesse Jackson on board with it, and then they had like some kind of young volunteer manager, somebody who they pulled off the internet or what, not pulled off the internet, but he's like he's a sort of like grassroots activist, but he had questionable background. He was supposed to be helping them with Michigan. His shit was questionable. So they have all these millennials. This is not a shot at millennials, I understand, but they were trying to reach a certain millennial demographic, which I get. They skipped over Gen Xers, and technically even over boomers, because Bernie isn't even a boomer. He's from the silent generation. He's not even a boomer. He's old. He's from the fucking World War II generation. Right? Yeah. And so is Jesse. Jesse's like just on the other side.
Yeah, of
the
just board. On the other side
but
of that.
The thing is, like, you skip Gen X, you skip boomers, and go all the way to the oldest motherfuckers possible.
Yeah.
That's your man? Like, I don't understand. I don't understand the logic at all. Because my mama and them, they be like, don't nobody care what the fuck Jesse got to say. And my mother's like 6 years younger than Jesse.
That's what I'm saying.
Like, what?
Yeah, I don't understand. But what do you think, bro?
I'm good. Listen, man, you know, listen, if Bernie had won, then Bernie
I would have voted for him.
Bernie would have gotten my support.
Yeah,
yeah, of course.
That's the fight that we're in right now.
Yeah.
I just, even with how he did this, even with how he pulled out of the race, I think, and I felt, is very on brand for him, which is very selfish and self-centered.
Which is petty.
Right? Mm-hmm. Right? Yeah. And so, look, whatever this means, I hope that we're not looking at him at like fucking 83 in a walker.
Talk about running again.
President again. Because that's what I feel like is going to happen, right?
I do too.
And I feel like what we're seeing here is a person, you know, and I don't want to say, you know, like Trump is a terrible thing to say, but he is, I feel, this is a part of his brand. Being a handshaking, you know, leftist with these grandiose ideas and no complete
plan
on how he's going to accomplish it.
Yep.
You know, it's just, you know, it doesn't impress me. It doesn't move me.
And his solution to everything is to destroy an existing system and create some whole new system rather than work within the existing system. And we've already seen what that nets us. You know what I mean?
Or make any sort of realistic attempt at accomplishing any of these things. You know what I'm saying? Like, I think if he wanted to, you know, he's talking about the student debt, and sure, like, we can address the student debt, right? But it would be really, really dope if we can actually address the inflation of a college education, right? Like, at how much it costs. Like, can we start there? Can we start with the fact that these schools are actually applying for fucking a government aid because they don't have the coffers that one would think
of for the money that they system. Charge.
Exactly.
Where your money at? You know where's your money at?
So I listen, I'm not a politician. I'm not an economist. It's neither here nor there for me. Bernie flat out did not move me in any way. He did not, it did not feel like he had the, he was not a, like to me, Bernie was the type of dude that, you know, we lost by 30, but Bernie had 42 and Bernie's going to tell you about his 42.
Yeah. Right.
He's never going to tell you about the fact that we lost by 30.
Yeah,
I'm gonna tell you about his 42 and my three turnovers.
They
kept passing me the ball. I mean, I like, and I might have said this on here before. I know I probably said to y'all in the 2016 election. Hillary was always my candidate, but at first I liked Bernie. I liked his, you know, I liked what he represented. He seemed good natured. But then the petty started coming out, narrowed down to him and Hillary, and when he wouldn't withdraw.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when I was like, oh, nigga, you done got a taste of
the fame.
He really seems to love the adoration.
That's what I'm saying.
He's also like Trump. Yeah, because Bernie in Senate has never been like a Senate personality. Like he's always kind of alienated himself.
He's the epitome of hating from outside the club because he couldn't get in.
Exactly.
It's literally who he is. He's like pointing fingers like, you should have done this. I would have done this. And everybody's like, well, nigga, why you ain't do it then?
Right, you've been a senator for 40 fucking years, Bernard. What are you
doing?
What are you doing?
You know?
And so, aside from the fact that and I tell people this all the time, the fact that Bernie won't discuss race directly concerns me because Bernie he may be from Brooklyn, but he has no experience with a black constituency. And
he left Brooklyn a long time ago.
collect. Yeah, so I'm like, so the fact that you don't seem to want to put in real time with Black people, not just the cool, hip, Black, young Black people, but like Black people across the board, mm-hmm. is very concerning to me. And then the fact that his base, listen, we, when it comes to a Democratic candidate, right, like, people are now upset when you say, we need to vote blue. Like, that, this is your responsibility. How you're still mad at that after 4 years of Trump is beyond me.
Yeah.
But the lesser of two evils is a real political thing. Like, it's a real thing.
Yeah.
It's a real thing. And sometimes it's the decision that you have to make, because this decision isn't about you by yourself.
Exactly.
Just like social distancing and staying at home during Corona ain't about you by yourself. This vote ain't about you by yourself. And like, if you don't get that by now, I don't know.
Yeah,
I don't know.
So anyway, let's go. Let's,
I don't want to vote for Joe either, but like, at least I know this knows how to work the system.
Exactly.
Nothing else.
Exactly.
I know Joe knows how to work
the system. I mean, Joe's next thing, which is very important, and obviously he's Simone Sanders, and know that, is who he's going to pick as a running mate. That's going to be his next huge announcement, and we'll see what that comes with. Let's lighten up a little bit. Like everybody else, been watching a gang of TV and Netflix and Amazon, and I ain't really been, even now I don't fuck with Hulu. That is a goddamn shit. I'm even now I don't That's be going right. to the
you
Hulu.
You still never watched the Woo series?
Oh yeah, I watched that. The last thing on Hulu I've watched.
Okay.
It's the last thing on Hulu I've watched. But I've seen a couple of interesting things. I watched
Little Fires Everywhere on Hulu with Kerry Washington.
Yeah, I heard that's really good. I watched a documentary called Dawn Wall last night, which is really crazy. It's about this guy who climbs this mountain I guess in Wyoming. But it's kind of like his backstory. Like, he and his girl and some friends were like hiking in the Kazakhstan and one of those places over there, and got kidnapped by some rebels.
Oh, Lord.
Yeah, and they got, like, footage. Like, they got footage, because it wasn't that long ago. Like, it was, like, a few years ago. Like, maybe, like, 2015 or something. And, like, got footage, and then, like, a couple of the rebels ended up getting killed because they was in, like, a firefight. And then they was down to the last rebel, and the rebel was walking through a mountain. And this nigga pushed the rebel off the mountain.
Wow.
To get away. It's all kind of stuff. In the first 10, 15 minutes, I'm like, I can't believe we're only 10 minutes into this documentary, because so much shit is happening. Right. Again, it's live footage, so I would recommend that. I watched a documentary called The Scheme.
Mm-hmm.
I can't remember this cat's name. Black cat. Young cat. Who was acting as kind of like an agent for NBA players. He's from Michigan. And this is great. This is mad recent. This is like 2018. This is like a couple years ago. And he was the one who got Rick Pitino and a couple other big coaches got fired. It was because of him.
Okay.
Because they had their FBI, unbeknownst to him, was taping all his conversations about paying players and all this shit. Like, it was crazy. But at the end,
this was a different scandal than when the Adidas folks got fired for funneling people through camps.
I think it was an extension.
Yeah, it was an extension of that. Yeah,
I actually have a friend who got caught up in that and who's in jail for that right now.
Yeah. This guy did time. He did like I forget how much time, but he did time too. But yeah, but at the end of it, I mean, I'm spoiler alert, right? But at the end of it, this thing has got a record deal with Atlantic. I'm like, not surprising.
That is such a 2020 ending.
To anything.
I got a record deal.
Got a record deal in Atlantic. Yeah, he gave me a production deal in Atlantic Records. I'm like, God damn.
That's hilarious.
You know, but that was kind of interesting.
Have you watched How to Cover Up a Drug Scandal?
I haven't watched it, but I heard it's really good.
Yo, this shit. White people get away with the motion. So basically, it's the main story is about this chick who worked in, you know, when police do drug busts, they send their stuff. It's not a police lab. There is a separate lab who does the police work.
Ah, okay.
So, and sometimes those labs also have different areas that do pharmaceutical tests, like all different types of shit. Mm-hmm. So this one woman at this lab, there were two labs in Massachusetts, one that covered like Boston and one area, and another lab that covered Arlington. One side is Eastern, one side is Western, whichever.
Arlington, so, Massachusetts.
So say what?
Arlington.
Yeah. I think right. So she's at the smaller lab. Basically, this chick was getting high at the lab off the samples and the evidence for years and years. And when they felt like was high at work, high all the time. And I have to let you watch it to watch how it escalated. But even when they found out, rather than like really pull all the different cases she worked on and all that other stuff, they were trying to cover the whole shit up. And it just kept going up. Because right before she got caught, this chick at the other lab in Boston got caught for basically just falsifying shit about I don't know how many years. She would just look at the bag and be like, that's heroin. Look at the bag. Like, that's cocaine. It'd be like table salt. You know what I'm saying? Like, that shit. They were already just like cases upon cases that were just in shambles. But it's incredible, like, again, how long these things were going on and how much the reaction was more like, let's just leave it low because it's going to require us to do so much work.
Too much work, yeah.
Even though this work involves people's lives and freedom. Literally. Right? Literally. Like,
cats getting locked up is that innocent because it's bullshit.
Yeah, you gotta watch the shit. But the whole time you watch it, you're gonna be like, this is some white people shit. Yeah. But you gotta watch the shit. This is cooking crack in the lab. Like, you're cooking crack. Like, it's insane. It's so crazy.
Yeah, and I've been hearing about that, so I'm gonna watch that one. What else did I watch? I watched this. I mean, y'all wouldn't care. I watched the Yoji Yamamoto documentary. That shit was dope. Nobody cares about that. I know y'all niggas don't care about that. Nobody cared about that but me, but it was hot though.
I feel like there's some new shit I'm missing.
Oh, there's a gang shit. What you watch, bro?
A kid from Coney Island, Stephon Marbury.
Oh, Steph shit. How was it?
Yeah. I forgot about that.
It was good. I thought it was really creative what they did. They kind of used some claymation.
Really?
Wow. Yeah. So think of like the projects. You know, right. The PJs. So
the PJs. Yeah.
It's not as refined as that claymation, but it was kind of entertaining. It was
okay.
And they kind of really traveled through Steph's progression, and I mean, it's obviously the culmination of his second wind in his career in China.
Right.
And it was really, really dope. I mean, for those of us that played ball, you know, he's, I think he's like a year younger than me or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
I think he's like a year younger than me. But like anybody who played ball in New York City during that era, like, he was a prodigy.
He was the guy.
He was, I mean, from a kid. Like, mm-hmm. He was like the first, wow, this kid is really special. And as you got older and you really got to see him play, you realize he was. And one of the things the documentary reminded you of is how big he was. Like, you really, you don't really think of, like, he's basically like the fucking size of like a free safety. Like, dude is like,
yeah, he's like 6'2", 6'3". Yeah, he's big, like, yes, and muscular.
Athletic, and you forget that he's athletic because he actually, because of his older brothers, and his dad, and really, you know, learning the game at such a young age, he was technically good. Like that, like when you watch him technically play basketball,
yeah,
like, there's not a lot of unnecessary dribbling. There's like he's very, he's really,
he knows how to get to the right spots, yes, and like he's like, yeah,
great, he's one of the great people that I would say if you wanted to teach someone to play basketball, like have them watch him. And you know what I'm saying? Like, he's really good, man. And, you know, you go through that whole phase and everything, and then it talks about, you know, the depression phase. They kind of touch on
that a
bit. And then it really talks about the rebirth of him in China. And he is, you know, I saw a recent interview with Ebro, and he's done some things in the community, and you're watching him sort of engage and interact with these young kids from Coney Island who really don't have a clue as to who he was or who he is. But it's really heartfelt, man. It's heartfelt too because, you know, he's an emotional guy. And that's so...
Yeah, very. Always has been.
It's so not typical athlete.
Yeah.
They talk to his older brother. They talk to his two older sisters and his
mother. Eric, so, right? Eric Marbury, right?
Well, that's one of his brothers. But that's not the brother that's in here. Don Sr.
Okay.
I'm sorry, not Don Sr. Okay. That's his dad. Don Jr. is the one who's doing a lot of the talking about him. But, you know, it was really good and it was really refreshing. And I'm kind of glad that he's, you know, getting his flowers. I always felt like he was pushed out of the league. And he still had a lot left in the tank.
Yeah. He definitely was pushed out.
Yeah. And
like, that should have been, so much bigger, it feels like, in the league. Like,
well,
he should have been more of a, like, he, like, I feel like, but.
The issue with that is that, not that he wasn't as big, because I think he was big amongst his peers, but that, you know, we have to remember that when he came into the league, first of all, he comes in with probably the most heralded draft class in the history of basketball.
Right, but I feel like he gets left even out of those conversations with the guys he came in class with.
Yes, because you have Kobe and Allen Iverson.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
Right, like basically it's the son, you know, who's Kobe.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you know what I'm saying? So it's like you come in with those guys and then – the premature ending of his career. There was no, you know, AI was a shorter career, but a burst.
Yeah, but it's like a rocket.
Like a rocket ship. And, you know, meanwhile, you know, Steph comes onto the scene. In those first couple of years, he's in Minnesota.
Yeah, with Kevin,
He's doing well in basketball world, but he's not a star.
Right.
Whereas, you know, AI is in Philly. He's got commercials. Yeah, he's a star,
Kobe's in L.A.
He's shaking Jordan.
Franchises. Yeah.
Exactly.
Because the Timberwolves was brand new, right?
They were still fairly new.
They weren't even 10 years old at that point when they got him. And I say all that to say, watching this was really, really good. It was great to see somebody grounded, like he's walking through the hood, and of course, you know, people taking pictures and whatever like that. But there's a lot of motherfuckers that are just like, "Yo, what up?" Yes. Like, good to see you.
Yeah, what up? Regular. Like probably because he's there, plus he's there so much that it's not like, "Oh my God, it's Steph." It's like, "Oh, what up, man?"
Exactly.
Yeah. I also wanted to point out. Speaking of Steph, I saw. I don't even know what days things happen anymore. Could have been Monday. Could have been Friday. Could have been Saturday. Steph apparently himself has donated a number of masks, a large quantity of masks.
He got from China. To
healthcare,
because of his plugs in China. Yeah. So yeah, I'm trying to think. Of the, I don't think it's. Oh, I've started this other one called Orthodox, which is about this woman.
That's not a doc. That's a scripted series.
Yes, that's a scripted series. Yeah but that's a matter early. I can't even really talk about that one.
I started it and then I stopped.
You gotta kind of be in the mood for that.
Yeah,
that ain't one of them ones you just throw on like in the middle of the day. Like I'm gonna watch Orthodox.
And then your show, bro, your The Missing Children of Atlanta.
I wanted. I definitely wanted to mention that. They did the first, which is, you know, it's kind of weird because HBO has this documentary series called the Missing Children of Atlanta. It's about Atlanta child murders maybe in the late 70s into the 80s. I would say what's interesting is like they're not doing it. You can't binge it. There's only one a week.
They're releasing a week. Yeah, it's coming week.
So it's every Sunday. So it's kind of
because it's not just on demand. It's actually on HBO.
Yeah, it's on HBO. Yeah. So it's kind of like, oh, I gotta wait till Sunday to see the next one. You know what I'm saying? But the first one was, I mean. Yeah, I knew something about the case, but there's something, obviously, like, when you watch these documentaries, there's so much stuff I didn't know. So anyway, just background for people who don't know. So in the late 70s and early 80s, black boys started disappearing, and girls, but it was mostly boys, started disappearing in Atlanta. And this Atlanta was still not Atlanta now. So it was still a very southern city. So, like, the Klan was still very prominent. There was, of course, there was a civil rights leaders and there was a black, you know, presence in the city, but it wasn't that, because kind of put it in the terms of Atlanta like today, because it wasn't.
It wasn't Atlanta after the Olympics.
And after the music business kicked in, it was none of that at this point. So, this, and of course, because you know they were young black boys, they were all from poor neighborhoods, Clark Jackson's poor neighborhoods. Yeah. So the police wouldn't pay attention to the cases till they got to like I think 9 or 10, because they were happening pretty quickly. They weren't like they were happening pretty rapidly, and so they have interviews with. A lot of those surviving family members is a lot, again, because it was only it was 40 years ago, 30 years ago. So there's a lot of footage, yeah. You know, a lot of news footage and stuff. There's footage of the funerals, which is brutal. Like it was brutal. Like it's gut wrenching. Ain't even strong enough. I I'm talking shit because obviously I don't know and none of us know. It was almost like if we were watching like history, like a slavery footage.
Right.
Like it was that dark, like it was crazy.
So I was, if you were a kid, because I was like in elementary, I was in kindergarten to first.
You were around their age, because all these kids are around right. that age, yeah.
So if you were a kid in the Southeast during this time, you knew all about this shit because mm-hmm. your ass had to stay in the house. Like, yeah. I lived 2 hours away from Atlanta and I had to stay in the house.
Absolutely.
Because it was that scary. It was
and nobody real, knew anything.
Life, yeah, there was a real life boogeyman outside.
Yeah, and it's not like now, there's no social media. So, like, you just don't right. know. You just, you're watching the news like one time a night and yeah. you're hearing kind of stories, you know, like that right. or reading the paper, but it's not like, you know, you're not logging on to Twitter and getting information. Exactly. So it was really scary.
It was very scary, and they brought it up. VH1 did a really when VH1 was still doing kind of like the music docs. They did one on Atlanta a few years ago, and they in talking about the growing music scene in Atlanta, they touched on child murders a little bit.
Okay,
because I want to say the guy that they arrested, was he somehow connected, or then maybe they were just talking about the environment that was created around the Atlanta child murders because so many people in the Atlanta music scene would have been.
Yeah, you know, would have been a kid's age exactly.
Over there yeah. to kids.
And what I didn't know.
Somebody pointed out that Andre 3000 has a rap about it on Who's Out.
He does. Yeah, I forget. He said something about that, he was like scared of Williams Wayne. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Because he lived in one of those areas at these points. Yeah. Another thing that I didn't know, though, was that there was a bomb, it was a explosion at a daycare center in Atlanta at the same time. That killed, I think, four kids and one of the daycare workers, and obviously injured many more. I forget which area it was in, but it's right there in the heart of where it's
happening. I think it was Beaumont Homes or something like that.
Yeah, yeah, it's right here. One of the project areas. Yeah, one of the projects. And so that really took it to another level because then people in Atlanta are like, okay, it's definitely like the Klan. Because yeah. this ain't that long ago from the Birmingham bombing. So they're like, oh, this is definitely a bomb, the daycare center. To try to kill our babies. And Maynard Jackson was the mayor at the time, and he's catching holy hell because he's trying to, Maynard Jackson was the mayor, and what's the guy's name? He was the police chief in New York for a minute. But anyway, they were trying to kind of like ride the fence with it because Maynard was bringing on this business in, like the airport that just opened. He was trying to make us, you know, bring in business to like make it seem like white folks, Atlanta's a safe place to come and live. Right. So they're not trying to shine a light on it. But meanwhile, like the community's like, dude, like every day, they got footage of like kids like dead. They got footage like when they found kids dead. This documentary, Keisha Lance Bottoms is the mayor now. She's all through the doc. I think it was her to kind of help spur it to do it again. Okay. She's from there and she lived through it. But anyway, this is only episode one, but it's very intense. Like we haven't even gotten to Wayne Williams yet.
You know, and a lot of people don't think Wayne Williams is the person who did it, so they're curious if the documentary explores.
Yes.
Go ahead, bro.
Exactly what you're saying is exactly the angle that this doc is going to be headed in.
Okay.
Which is trying to provide an other side to Wayne and trying to provide some sort of alternative theory that Wayne was not the person who did this. So maybe 2 years ago now, mm-hmm. Monster, which is a podcast, did a series on Wayne. It was highly...
Oh, really?
It was highly... rated. It's probably a good listen if you want to go back. I mean, you ain't doing shit. Go ahead and listen to it. And there were a ton of attempts at trying to get these alternate theories.
Right.
Wayne is still trying to obviously get out of prison.
Mm-hmm.
He's been there for well over 40 years at this point.
Right.
I don't believe that there is an alternative theory here. I saw Roc Nation as a producer, and
I didn't realize that.
My antennas kind of went up a little bit, only because I know that a big part of their social justice arm is about prisons and about overturning
prison reform and all that.
Prison reform and attempting to overturn convictions and things of that nature. And the reality is that two things can be true. The police could have absolutely botched and not done thorough investigations on many of these cases, as well as Wayne is an absolute serial killer. Did all that shit.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Like, two things can be true at the same time. And one of the things that you're pointing out, Jeff, is very important, and I think that we have to remember that, is that when people think of Atlanta, they think of Atlanta over the last 25 years. And what we have to remember is that Atlanta's growth exponentially over the last 25 years is because of the previous 20 years. So prior to that Olympics, we're talking about, like you said, this is a small town in the South. That ultimately turns into an international city. By 1996. You know, between the moves of
Turning point was 100% like the Olympics was the beginning, really.
The Olympics was the beginning of what we know. And what Maynard was trying to, Mr. Jackson, I should say, it's not my friend. He's elder.
But still, with a nigga named Maynard.
You got to call him Maynard.
Maynard.
So he of course, is, you know, and not to get, you know, I watched his documentary, which is also.
Yeah, I watched it too.
Very, very good. But you know that he is trying to walk this fine line. Right. He is trying to walk this line of knowing that if he is not able to get businesses and jobs and industry to come to Atlanta, that he is not going to be able to allow those small black businesses to become mid-level and big black businesses with those city contracts and things of that nature. So he was always trying to walk a tightrope. And this was really, this was one of those situations where it made it even more difficult to walk a tightrope, because we're talking about black babies, okay? And this pick a side right now, nigga. Like, that's what this...
That's what they're saying,
That's what it kind of boiled down to. So, you know, look, do I think Atlanta had a police department that we think of right now, fully investigations and all of that sort of shit? No, because I think we watch a lot of CSI, and I think we watch a lot of television, Law and Order.
And think shit ends in an hour.
And we have wrapped our head around this idea that you can do all of these things. And one of the things that the detective says was really poignant, right? He's like, there's none of the technology. Everything you think about now, he's like, there's a camera.
Yep.
They weren't even doing DNA testing.
No.
There was no DNA. It was a camera. It was a pad and a pencil.
And you start asking questions to the neighbor.
Tape measure. That was it.
Which is why serial killers took so long to catch.
Exactly.
Serial killers are serial killers because they take a long to catch. They take a long time to catch.
And so there's this idea that's planted very early on in episode one that, you know, This couldn't have been a black person because we would have known who that was. And we know that that is just so far from the truth. I mean, just based on the Slim Reaper who terrorized South Central for a quarter of a century, killing women.
He did 100 or 200 or some crazy number?
It wasn't that much, but it was definitely double figures. He got like 20 something murders or something.
Yeah.
That they've tied him to.
Yeah.
So let's just say,
so that means there's probably at least
there might be 50.
Yeah.
Another 25 more, right?
Yeah.
So we know that this is not the case, right? We know that from everybody and growing up in Black areas that trying to make this a Klan thing. First of all, we know white men in general are going to have a very difficult time with getting Black kids to come to them.
Hell to the yeah. car in the middle of the hood.
That's why the Klan kills people in groups and in mass.
That's, so that yeah.
they
yes.
can
yeah. exactly. Yeah. And a white man just sort of like just sort of cruising the hood in 78, 79 is just not, you know.
You're saying get in the car.
Listen, there we talk about, and you'll hear this from Bomani when he talks about the two Atlantas. There's always been two Atlantas.
Always.
It's like there's
you know, two Atlantas now. I need to realize it.
Absolutely. So they're clearly laying the groundwork of trying to have an alternate theory. I felt a little, the footage didn't break me as much as I felt a little icky with some of the interviews.
I was literally bringing that up. Like there's interviews with at least three or four. Maybe four or five of the mothers, they're still alive. Like these yeah. wasn't, you know, they're elderly ladies now, but they're still alive, and they talk, and just their grief is so, you know, present. Like, because it's like, you know, they lost a child, and they don't know what happened.
Right.
They don't know what happened, and it never went away. And there's one cat who's one of he was his brother. And he's like, you know, like, yo, we used to go swimming all the time. And he knew to come home. And I gave him my shrimp trunks that day because mine was dirty. And I stayed home. And he never came home. Like, they're just perplexed. Like, what? And then there's one that really just touched my soul was there's a woman who looks probably in her 50s now who was one of the kids' aunt. But she was a young aunt at that time. She was like 13 or something. And so she took them to the store because it was her birthday. And she went to the store to get, and the kid's mom is her older sister. And she calls her big sister. And she's like, I took her to the store because I want a big sister to make me a cake for my birthday.
Right.
And the woman who's big sister, she's like, yeah, and I needed some salt. So I told her to go down to the store. So she said, went to the store, and she said her little nephew wanted to stay outside. She's like, okay, but you stay right
like
here.
Because probably when the toys used to be outside.
Yeah. So she went in and got the stuff, and she said that she sent the other little kid out to go get him, because we were ready to go. And the kid came back, and he's not there. And so looking around, I said, well, maybe he went home, you know, because it was walking distance. And they come home, and she's not home, and the mother's like, and I kept just looking up and down the street, and he just never came back. And then they found him in, like, the woods not far away, and he's dead. And then the girl who was, now a woman, she's just, like, still, she's carrying this. And she turns to her sister, and she says, I'm sorry. I'm sorry that I'm asking you to make me a cake. I'm so sorry. This is my fault. And the sister's like, no, it's not your fault. And they hug it, and like the crying, like you could tell it's like a release of crying from like 40 years.
Right.
She's like, she's carrying this, like, it's my fault that my nephew died because my ass wanted a cake. It's such a painful thing.
Oh, you never celebrate my birthday again.
So that scene, and there's a couple other ones where I felt... I just felt
you feel exploitive a little bit.
Yes. Exploitive is a very strong word, and I don't want to say that. But for lack of a better word, right?
Or intrusive?
Yes. That's the word. Intrusive. I felt like I was invading a space that wasn't necessarily meant for me, and I felt like the producers had kind of listen. I understand production, right? Let the cameras roll, and you want to catch that because you want to catch the raw emotion. Because the purpose of the documentary, and every documentary has a purpose, and its purpose is probably to reignite that fear and that feeling of loss. And I don't want to be dismissive of them attempting to do that. If I'm making any sense, I felt like it was a lot. And
yeah, like this should have been a conversation they had like at the house.
I felt like that was just a personal conversation for them to have, and it's probably a conversation that they have had, and I felt like they kind of were, I don't want to say made, but
I got you, but almost like, well, do you feel guilty that you got
absolutely leading
questions and stuff, producers are that's what you don't hear behind the camera. Producers are very good for queuing up the statements that they, the sound bites that they want, right? So even if it's a true statement, they are very good. If you don't say what you want, what they are hoping you will say on your own, they are good to ask you very specific questions to elicit
a response. Pointed questions. And
so we're gonna keep. No, go ahead, bro.
No. I was just gonna say that nigga did it. And that's how I feel. And I don't know what to tell you. I mean, I'm gonna watch it.
All right, we're gonna make that documentary, a chunky, that nigga guilty as fuck.
Yeah, I'm like Kanan on the phone, nigga. Whatever they say he did that shit.
Yeah. So we're gonna keep, you know, we'll keep up, because like I said, I think it's 4 or 5 parts, so it's going to be going on for next one. And next week is going to be also good stuff to talk about, because this, it's a black, in all the midst of this chaos, it's a black as fuck weekend, because Saturday is the Clark Sisters movie, which is highly anticipated. I cannot wait to watch it. And Sunday is Insecure's premiere. So
I don't even remember what the fuck happened last season.
At the end of last season, it was, remember, it showed that Lawrence was dating her friend. Remember, her friend left
and went to go date Lawrence, but
Issa didn't know at the time. Right. And then Issa had broke up with old boy, because remember, he had disappeared.
Right.
I don't know if he's coming back. I haven't seen him in any clips, but that doesn't mean
anything. I guess I got it.
And then Tiffany had the baby shower, remember, and that was a whole big thing, because she was kind of like the end of their relationship as they currently knew it. Those are the things I remember. Oh, and then what's her name? Molly decided to give the Asian cat some play.
Right. Okay, now.
Hey, one last doc I want to suggest. I don't know if you guys have watched it, but East Lake Meadows is a really great doc. It's a Ken Burns.
What's it called? Say it again now. Say it again.
East Lake Meadows.
East Lake Meadows, okay.
This is about a housing project in Atlanta, and you know, the residents and what they kind of went through in that particular thing. Anybody that's lived in public housing, we kind of know these things, right? But you really sort of watch the sort of systematic way of how redlining, housing discrimination, how you are basically sort of sealed off from the city in a lot of these areas and in a lot of these places. You know, particularly outside of like maybe like New York and Chicago, have, you know, our housing projects sort of were like done in the city. So they actually sit on very prime real estate, but in a lot of other places, they're not really like that, right? Like they're kind of on the outskirts. And so
kind of out there. Exactly.
So you watch this, and it's really, it's a Ken Burns doc. So again, it's very thorough. Yeah. It literally starts from the beginning. But a lot of those guys are, you know, they're telling their stories through their eyes. They're not, you know, it's not all fucking doom and gloom, like, you know, it's not, you know, my mother died, you know, in the bathroom,
heroin,
or no crazy shit like that, you know what I'm saying? But it's really good, and it's an easy watch. It's a 2-hour watch, but it doesn't feel like that at all.
What network is it on?
It's PBS, so it's free. So you can pull it up on your computer.
On demand.
Because all PBS stuff is usually on whatever mobile sites they have. You can pull that up at any point.
Got it.
Okay. All right. Cool. I want to mention peace and love to Adele, who's going through a divorce. And I don't know if it's confirmed, but early signs look like she's okay.
It's not confirmed. That 140 million number.
It was 140 million pounds, by the way.
Right, which is
$1 million. Yeah.
It's not confirmed. I think that number comes from what her value was at the time of marriage or something like that. But there's the terms of their settlement what actually was coming out was that the terms of her, the judge agreed to keep the terms of their divorce settlement locked down. It'll never be public. So that number is speculation.
It's just speculation. Okay, cool.
That's what they're saying is that is the fortune, for lack of a better term. That's the fortune.
Yeah, that's what that
they
play.
Have to. Yes, that they have to figure out how to divvy up.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Let's go to a couple of music things. So
Teddy better be on his goddamn list because I got things to say.
Yeah. We're gonna get to Theodore. First of all, I gotta give a shout out. I've been a fan of this guy. I remember arguing about debating with one of my young A&R cats, Tunji. He was at Atlantic at the time, and he was moving to RCA where he is now. He's been doing great work. And I remember he and I going. What's that?
Doesn't he have a label deal at RCA?
Yeah, he's got a label deal, and he's an A&R person there as well. We used to have these debates all the time about Tory Lanez versus Bryson Tiller. At the time, they were both like SoundCloud guys. And I was a Tory Lanez. I love them both, but I was a Tory guy, and he was more of a Bryson guy. And he ended up signing Bryson, and of course, he's been very successful. But I remember being like, nah, man, I'm telling you, Tory's the one. Tory ended up doing a deal at Interscope and has had some success as an artist. But it's just kind of wild because since the quarantine happened, he started this thing on IG Live called Quarantine Radio, mm-hmm. where he does it in his crib. I don't know where. I don't know if he's in Toronto because he's from Toronto. I don't know if he's in Toronto or Los Angeles. I can't tell because you just kind of see the sun in the back. You don't really kind of see a skyline. But does this thing, he's in the house, and he's just kind of yelling, quarantine radio, and they have all these kind of sound effects going constantly, so it's a very fast-moving kind of thing, and he goes on, and girls will come on, and they'll twerk, and get naked, and, you know, then artists will come on, and Drake came on last week, and it was just kind of like this kind of chaotic, frenzied show, but the numbers are insane, like, he's getting, like, remember, we were excited, as we should have been, when D-Nice Derek cracked 100 grand that night.
Yeah, but you mentioned him last week.
Yeah, but there's a new piece to the story. So this week, he did Quarantine Radio yesterday, mm-hmm. and he was up to 350. Mm-hmm. And IG shut his shit down.
The reason IG shut his shit down is because, to your point...
Of the flavor scene.
Kids be getting on there. Yeah. IG doesn't have a security gate. There is no way to know.
Yeah, how old these kids are.
Some of these girls look young as hell.
They definitely look young.
Not for nothing, Tory needs to be careful of that because guess what? You yourself, Tory, can be held responsible for distributing
your pornography
of a minor. Whether you knew she was a minor or not. It's your account. It's your shit. So yesterday got shut down.
Then he started a new page called Quarantine Radio. And he got up to 100,000 just like that, and they shut that one down. So I guess now he's having some conversations with Instagram about what his parameters are going to have to be. But I'm just saying, like, I didn't see Tory Lanez becoming this kind of radio internet sensation. Like, I didn't – it just came out of nowhere. Like, really, Tory Lanez? I mean, he's got personality and all that, but just kind of like, Tory Lanez, really? I saw it being somebody else, but he's this huge – entity, and again, it's as big as some of these battles have been, like Lil Jon and T-Pain, which we're going to talk about next. They got up to 280, which is again incredible. Like Tory had to beat by like 70 grand, you know, and it was still going. He could have got to 400, who knows? Right. So it's just interesting how his thing is really just kind of taken off. So we'll see what happens with him. It's just really interesting to watch. But let's talk real quick about Lil Jon and T-Pain, because that was the last battle, which was last week. And John got him. I think T-Pain probably would have lost anyway, but T-Pain definitely like played some records that were kind of like, why you play that, bro? Like, he played his verse on Flirt by R. Kelly, which is just persistent.
And he set it up knowing.
Knowing. Yeah, because he said, I'm probably going to get in trouble for this. Y'all going to be mad at me.
Yeah.
He didn't play Shorty. Which is
he
a
played it in, bad, they did like an well,
yeah,
like
after shit. Shit. Yeah. He didn't play within his 20.
Him and John both did some missteps. This is where I think what was otherwise a very entertaining set, the most entertaining one yet, just in terms of raw personalities, going back and forth.
Yeah.
They made a couple.
And a mutual respect for each other.
A mutual respect and love. They made a couple of missteps. One of the missteps was, I think, when they were putting up, when they were crafting their top 20 list. So me and Fonte from Little Brother were having a conversation about, from Little Brother and Foreign Exchange, we're having a conversation about the Teddy Babyface thing when it looked like it might still happen. Mm-hmm. And this is relevant here. Fonte was like, there's a difference between hits and jams. And where Teddy might be able to have an edge on Face is he can stack the jams differently than the hits, right? Because he has, you know, because they might not have been as big on the charts. They might not have sold as many records.
But they mean a lot to us.
But they mean a lot. And where, and I say that to say that with John and T-Pain, where I saw missteps with both of them is that there were a couple of times where they put up hits instead of thinking about jams. So, like, Shorty might not have been a chart hit, but it's what the people wanted.
But Shorty actually was a chart hit, too, though, by the way.
Oh, what? Okay.
Yeah, it did pretty well, yeah.
John didn't put up Bia Bia all night. We all thought he was going to close with Bia Bia. We thought that was going to be the big joker. This nigga closed with Turned Down For What,
yeah,
which was a massive chart hit, but it's a white people hit. It's a Vegas. Yeah. We don't give a fuck about that song. Nigga, we want to flip a table over in the living room. Where's that shit? You know what I mean?
It's like, same with T-Pain closing with All We Do Is Win. It's kind of like, and I agree with you, like that's a misstep in that. And again, it's, you know, it's hard to, you know, look, these guys are going to be a ton of money off these records. So they're like, this is my joker. But in reality, like a Michael Jackson, perfect example, because I heard this record the other day. If you play a Michael Jackson records for black people,
right?
Black people now, I'm not Jackson 5, Michael Jackson, you gotta play Baby Be Mine.
You have to. You can
people will be like, that wasn't even a single. But it's like, no.
You can leave Thriller out.
You should leave Thriller out. And you gotta play Baby Mine, because that's our jam.
That's a perfect example. Exactly.
That's our jam. Like, we gotta hear that. That's the cookout jam. Like, we got to hear that.
I gotta get my two-step onto that.
Exactly. Yeah. So I think they were gonna close with our biggest songs. But like you said, John didn't play B.I.B.I. He didn't play Never Ever, which is astonishing.
Yeah, like, that's how astonishing. All anybody wanted. I was like, "Where's the fight music?"
He didn't play. I don't give a fuck. To
flip some shit. I was ready to jump on my own goddamn couch. Yeah. One of my Twitter followers, George Frost, he was like a former NFL player. He was like, "Yo, when John plays B.I.B., I gotta call one of these kids downstairs to catch an elbow. Somebody gotta get an elbow." You know, like.
Yeah. And then T-Pain didn't play, so he didn't play Shorty, and he didn't play Chopped and Screwed. It's like, nigga, like, are you kidding?
He finally played it late. After set, but like, and even in that after set, John still ain't played B.I.B. It's like, nigga.
Yeah. So I agree with you. So it was kind of interesting how they kind of gauge, I'm gonna play my biggest song, like you said, instead of my biggest jam, which is
that.
If you can combine your biggest song and jam,
it works.
And that's, did John play Nuck If You? Well, he didn't produce Nuck If You Buck, though. So.
No, but he played.
He played Scrappy, though, right?
He played Scrappy.
Yeah.
And
his biggest response to me was when he played the Trillville with the.
Yeah, that was actually another big response was he did what's the reggae joint he played? That was.
He played it early, too, because a lot of people didn't know he did it. I can't remember the name of it now.
Why can't I remember? I was like, oh, shit. He definitely played a couple that had big responses. We knew Lovers and Friends was going to have a big response. And, he played early, too.
I think he should have played Lovers and Friends last.
Yeah. Well, when he played Lovers and Friends, like, second to last or third to last. So I was like, oh, he must be about to play Lovers and Friends and then play Bia Bia. And this nigga turned down for what? Even when he played Shots, I was like.
Yeah, like, okay, nigga, like. Yeah, but in Vegas, but that was never a hit. We respected it as a hit, but that was never a hit for us.
I was like, I can feel the drunk white people bumping into me right now. Like, I can feel it. You know, like, and that song played. So, but another thing that John and T-Pain weren't doing, I think the only people who really done this well, aside from Swiss and Tim directly, have been
Neo and Jonte. No,
they weren't reading the comments. They weren't really, or when they did, they spent too much time in the comments. Like, John would say hey to somebody and then keep talking. I got a song for you. I'm gonna DM you. Yeah, I'm gonna email you. Yeah, I got some heat. You got to get up on that.
And I know T-Pain from the Jive days.
Yeah.
And so I was concern, because that's how he's very, like, for lack of a better term, he's very kind of like goofy, and he like goes up on all these tangents. That's how he is. I was kind of like, this is gonna be kind of hard for him, because it's hard to keep him focused.
Right.
So, I mean, a couple of times John was like, I'm gonna play a song again because you keep talking.
But a couple of times as the night went on, it started with T-Pain going on a tangent. As the night went on and John kept drinking, Payne was trying to keep John straight. So Payne would be like, Jonathan, you know, but like. It was very fun. It was like watching. It was like if Sean and Dream were like watching your mama's brother and your daddy's brother who don't like each other arguing while they've been drinking. T-Pain and John were like watching your favorite uncles happy drunk. Yeah. You know what I mean? Just telling stories.
And talking shit.
Just talking. We was like, niggas, can y'all play?
But I also wanted to hear more stories. Like, I love the story that John, because I never knew that about the chair.
Oh, yeah, that he was just squeaking the chair?
I always thought that they sampled a bed. I thought they did. Because back then, there used to be these sound effects CDs. They had. It was like, literally, any sound effects you could think of, there were these CDs that you could just find it. There'd be like 80 things on one CD. You're just like, oh. So I thought he just found the bed sound. I didn't know he actually sampled the chair that he was sitting in. That was like a great story. And that's the kind of stuff I want to hear more. Like if T-Pain got stories too, like, okay, when you made the record with Chris, talk about it.
Yeah.
You know, so, but let's move on to what was supposed to be, which was the next battle was supposed to be Theodore Riley versus Kenneth Edmonds and Antonio Reed Jr.
Can I set this one up? Because I feel very passionate.
Yeah. Yes.
Okay, so.
Wait, bro. You got some. Bro, I didn't mean to cut you out of this. You got. Bro, say you got nothing to say.
No. I have nothing to say about John and T-Pain.
Okay.
So. Last Thursday, maybe, Teddy did a live stream. But not on IG. It might have been Friday, but I think it was Thursday. But not on IG. He did it on this platform called OmniStream, I think it's called. And we thought it was going to be like what everyone else has been doing, which was just like some stripped down. He's playing his hits. Maybe put the vocoder, because that nigga can't do nothing without the vocoder.
Tell a couple stories.
Once you got to the stream, if you could find the motherfucking stream.
Yeah, I mean, yeah.
Because he did a couple things wrong from jump. He didn't promote it well. He didn't have his main site post to it. And when people heard that Teddy was
He did the old nigga shit.
He did a bunch of old nigga shit. When he first posted about it, instead of putting up a graphic that said where to go, he put it all in the comments, which was like, nigga, nobody's reading all of that. Mm-hmm. So people were like looking on his IG, looking. Finally, during the stream, he was posting clips on IG, or somebody was, and pointing towards his live. They were going on his site, but it wasn't on his main site. Anyway, you go to the live, and this nigga got like 12 synthesizers, drum kit, keyboard, sound tech, got David Hollister and the rest of whoever the fuck these new Black Street people are. Yeah. No social distancing. Everybody been groomed. Everybody been styled. There's clearly everybody got ear monitors, which means there's a sound tech in the room some fucking where.
Mm-hmm.
Like, completely.
Cameramen,
multi-camera setup. Completely defeats the purpose of all of this, right? Like, completely misses the mark. It's overproduced, but at the same time, it's not tight, because it didn't seem like they had like a really set, you know, set list. The DJ is in the back like, everybody scream, nigga, it's a camera. I don't know. You know what I mean? Like, so the point of all of these is supposed to be a certain feeling of casualness and intimacy that makes the fan feel like they're getting something close and kind of raw.
Intimate.
And this wasn't that, right? Also, the screen, the site was a terrible viewer experience. It's banner ads, it's pop-up ads, like the screen is cluttered. It's just, and it wasn't mobile compatible. Like, it's just all bad. It's all old nigga shit, right? So at the end of the stream, which I missed because I had tuned out, because it's the same goddamn set that I've been watching Teddy do for 4 years already. At the end of the stream, Teddy says that he's been invited to battle LA and Babyface. So when I hear that, I say, A, the LA and Babyface know that. B, does Teddy realize that means IG Live, right? And so people were telling me, well, they said that, well, Tim and Twist said it, they confirmed it. I'm like, okay, let's see how that works. So that was supposed to happen on Sunday, the day after Payne and John.
John.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so people are excited. I was kind of like, I never really, and it was supposed to be him. I was actually surprised at this. Well, I guess it makes sense because Face is really better known as the producer than LA. Supposed to be him and Face, not him and Face in LA. I actually expected him to be him in LA because this seems more like LA's lane to me than Babyface. But,
and LA produced a lot of these records LA, with him.
Yeah, LA co-produced most of the shit that we know him for, but I guess technically LA is the production face. So I don't know, whatever. So, but I also never, I wanted to see LA and Face against Jimmy and Terry if I saw them against anybody because mm-hmm. I feel like they're peers.
Yeah, they're peers.
So,
yeah.
But people were excited. People were like, oh, this is going to be classic. People were talking about songs. People were talking about who's going to win. Wake up Sunday. Swiss post that is postponed. Swiss makes a mention about getting the quality right. And he's like, we're going to do it at a date soon. We just want to get it right. So then speculation starts flying. One thing that was speculated upon that it really was about quality because IG Live is only set up to work for an hour at a time. Yeah. So it, and some, the battle producers have some have been more adept than others at coming back after that cutoff.
Yeah.
Payne and John would be a little hyper aware of it. It'd be like 3 minutes out. They'd be like,
let's just start again now. Yeah.
Let's
yeah.
just start again. Then it take them, then they want to wait for all 250, however many people to come back
before they start,
before they start yeah. again. And so it was a lag, whatever. So it made it a little awkward. So first I was like, well, you know, it's growing. They want to change the quality. Sound quality varies because I don't think the producers realize that when you're turning your volume up at home, it actually is making it worse.
It distorts
the listeners mm-hmm. to the phone. So, you know, they get excited. They turn the volume up.
That T-Pain kept doing that a lot.
Yeah. It just distorted. That's what Manny was doing as well. So I was like, so maybe if they're trying to improve the quality experience, I understand. Then somebody said that Tidal was trying to move it to their platform, which still may or may not be true. I don't know. But nobody else has the streaming capability to give you everything Live gives you right now.
Mm-hmm.
Twitch possibly, but the engagement isn't the same as Twitch. You can't
see. Yeah, people. Quickly. Yeah, yeah. People. A lot of people don't go have Twitch. Like, yeah, younger people have Twitch. Not this audience.
And you know, maybe there's a YouTube element, but you can't see the comments in real time on YouTube. Like, nobody has all because the engagement is half the fun. Watching the comments and seeing their peers in the comments. Like, for us, half the fun is not just watching the producers, but watching the people who know the producers, who are other celebrities and fans and whatever, in the comments following along as well, right? And watching mm-hmm. regular people's comments. So it comes out, and then, so that was one speculation, okay, they're trying to improve it, Tidal's trying to take it. Then it was like, they want to monetize it. That was the other speculation, but it wasn't clear if it was Teddy or if it was Swiss and Sam or whatever. So it comes out finally by Monday that indeed it was Teddy's ass trying to monetize it by taking it to his janky ass platform that he's a partner in. But what you could tell about how Teddy was talking about it was that, and I don't think that I remember Teddy being in any of these producer battles. He didn't get it. It's just as simple as he didn't get it. He didn't get that the intention is for it to be casual. Like, again, Swiss was in his car for the one with him and Tim, right? Mm-hmm. The intention is for it to be casual. The intention is for it to be off, is to, for it to feel very like homeboys chilling, right? Mm-hmm. You know, peers. It's not a show. And Teddy was like, I mean, I can't just go back and forth with Babyface. We need mediators. And it's like, nigga, it's not a divorce proceeding. Like, you don't need, you know, you don't. The intention, the literal intention is that y'all go back and forth. Like, that's
and talk to each other. So, yeah, we don't need anybody popping in or you like, oh, let me see if I could find, you know, so-and-so and see what they think about the song that we just played. Like, that just turns into a whole other thing.
So I can already tell that Teddy was going to wanted it to become something that it's not, wanted to become something overproduced. He wanted a host and he wanted.
I knew that though, because that's Teddy and that's who he is.
That's Teddy.
I said that early. I said this, I don't, you know what? I think we got saved.
Oh, yeah, it would have been horrible.
It would have
been boring.
Because Face would have just been in his studio. you know, maybe kicking it, kicking it or whatever with his guitar and just hanging out. Yeah. And Teddy would have done what he did the previous week.
And have 82.
Try to make it a show. He'd have been like, now I'm going to play Groove Me. And he would have
had. Yeah, and be playing
his singing and shit.
And the vocal order over everything instead of press the button.
Yeah, it would have been terrible. It would have took a long time because Teddy would have been trying to set up the band, and it wouldn't have been like what you said, which is supposed to be Teddy. Tell me how you about when you did It Takes Two for Rob Bass.
Right,
in the projects.
Right,
we want to hear
that
story.
That's all we want, and I see now that Teddy A would not have been able. He doesn't understand the sportsmanship of it. Like, you have to have you have to be a good sport for this, mm-hmm. because you have to be willing to take an L in a couple of categories. I don't think Teddy has the ego for it. I see that he wouldn't be able to be a good sport. I see that, you know, Teddy has forgotten just about the raw energy of it, the cultural energy of it, right? Because he's so concerned about
the show.
Because even his show right now, we all talked about the Essence. We were all texting each other. Why are there pyrotechnics? Why are there all these dancers? Why do they look like NBA dancers? Why is so much happening
at
this stage? It doesn't need to be all that.
That's
right?
What it is.
Sound effects. Like, it's just, why are the transitions so clanky? It's just too much. So we got saved. And also, Teddy apparently is a 5G conspiracy theorist about the corona. So we got saved from that. Because John went into a Dr. Sebi moment. And we was all like, nigga, get moved next. Let's move on.
I did see the trailer for the Dr. Sebi doc. I mean, it looked kind of interesting, the little trailer. I'm going to watch it.
I'm going to watch it. Like, no, I'm not saying there's not stuff to learn from the man. But
we don't want to hear that now. I want to hear Peace of My Love, nigga. Just
y'all
play with
talk about y'all don't take me back to these niggas. If you don't get your ass off to play another song.
What you got to say about it?
Everything about the experience with Teddy was so on brand. Like nobody stays on brand the way that nigga does. Nobody. Anybody that has ever gone to a show, that has ever worked in any capacity, either with him or one degree of separation from him, we knew what was coming. We all knew. We was like, I don't know.
Yeah.
And it was exactly what we thought it was. It was exactly about, you know, look, Teddy, I understand, and I think we all understand what it means for people who have made these deposits in the culture and are looking to reap the rewards from that. And no one is suggesting that you go out here and have a fucking 20-piece band and do a 2-hour show and do it for free, right?
Right?
No one is asking you to do that.
Right.
This was, you know, talking shit, you know, with a fellow peer, mm-hmm. with somebody on your level, and kind of having fun because we're all kind of in the crib.
Right.
Yeah.
And get your dreams up, nigga, at the meantime. Yeah.
That's really, and also, man, it just, he lacks the ability to read the room.
He
just lacks the ability to read the room. And, you know, this was just, this wasn't, none of this was in the spirit in which Teddy was trying to go down this avenue. And it was just like, yo, man, like, honestly, it was a turnoff.
It was
really like, I'm good, bro. Like, I'm not even really that interested. And like you said, now we've seen this show a couple times, and we were all kind of very perplexed as someone who has been around for so long, having this sort of weird, very long show. Was just, it was a lot of lulls. Like, listen, nigga, you know, I'm a New York, a old school hip hop nigga for real. But like, nigga, I don't need to see Kumo D. Playing, you know, how you like me now, nigga?
Teddy remixes all the songs. He puts the voice box, whatever y'all want to call it.
Yeah,
all the songs that didn't have it on it to start with, and that nigga, we don't need it now.
And here's
right?
the thing. Here's mm-hmm. the other thing that I think that a lot of people don't really recognize is that Teddy is a prodigy. He was a kid when
a church kid.
This shit. He was
a church kid before that.
He was sheltered. He was isolated and insulated to some degree. I think that's why you have a person who can't really read the room.
Exactly. I mean,
that's why you have a person who doesn't really have those sort of kindred connections to other producers.
Because he fights with every fucking body. People know that. People who respect Teddy, and I'm not even telling tales, that's cool. There are plenty of producers who respect the shit out of Teddy, but they don't really fuck with Teddy. Teddy, to even paraphrase something that we all said in our group chat, if you ever wonder why Teddy founded a bunch of groups, but all those groups broke up because of Teddy too, right? And even when Guy on Back and Blackstreet were trying to go on tour together, like when Teddy first started Teddy Riley and Friends, Aaron Hall and Damian Hall were still on that shit. Aaron Hall ain't on that shit no more. You know why? Because Aaron and Teddy can't be together.
And like, Dave Halston comes in and out.
Dave Hollister comes in and out. Chauncey Black owns the fucking copyright, so they can't even perform as Blackstreet. But Teddy is the reason. The only reason Rex and Effects still got to come around is because they fucking can. You know what I mean? Like, they cannot. He is the problem. He's always the problem. And even with this, like, Teddy was making it a business thing. And I got to commend Swiss and Tim. I have plenty of criticisms about Swiss and Tim, and I've worked with Tim directly. I do have criticism about them sometimes, but in this one, they are getting it right, because both of them have said separately, none of this is about business right now. This is about energy. This is about the fans. This is about providing a moment. This isn't about a dollar right now. So like Tim said it in an interview with Vibe, Swiss went on live today and was like, he was like, yo, and he didn't mention Teddy. He didn't mention the situation, but he was basically like, if your intention isn't right, you got to have the right energy and the right intention, all the rest of that shit will come. And it's true. Like, there will be room for a versus tour series, a TV series, whatever, when this shit is over. But right now, it's about the energy.
People just need it.
Yeah, you start talking about monetization, and then it's like, well, who gets paid for what? Because all y'all niggas are doing is pressing buttons. It becomes like some whole other shit.
So I'm very curious to see what who the next pairing is going to be. I'm sure they're working on it as we speak. Yeah, they definitely are.
They realized Teddy was about to kill their momentum. After Teddy did the Charlamagne interview with Charlamagne on Live, when he was talking about the G5 shit and why he wanted to move it to his platform and having mediators and all this other bullshit, as soon as that clip started going viral, Tim and Swiss put a message up that was basically like, this nigga ain't stopping no show.
So I'm very curious. I know they're working on it, and I'm sure they'll probably have something set up for this weekend coming. I wonder what happened with Puffy and Jermaine. That was the thing. Maybe they're working on getting that together. I don't know, but I'm sure they'll be fine. You know, there's plenty of people to work with, and they'll be fine. Peace to Bobby Valentino and Pleasure P.
Oh my God, that was the funniest shit in the world. Who was trying to do their own little shit?
Yeah.
Bobby Valentino so mad that people kept saying, "Who asked for?"
Who asked for this? The people. We in the house. Nigga came on the thing wearing a koofy. You ain't got nothing else to do.
Where else I'm gonna wear it?
Yeah, some.
Shout out to all my African niggas.
Yeah, exactly. Oh my God, these niggas is crazy. So yeah, that's it, man. We're gonna wrap it up on that. Please, everybody, stay safe out there. Every day I wake up, like, I'm gonna ride my bike. I'm gonna go outside. And then I'll be like, I'm scared. So I don't ride my shit. I'm going to ride my shit. Maybe it's up to the store, because I need to pop out of the store real quick.
Yeah, I take a little walk. Okay, I actually do need to go outside more, because the lack of vitamin D is legit making me sluggish. Like, I've had to take from a vitamin supplement. So my intention is to go outside more just to get some air, right? Just to get a little fresh air, not to be outside wilding. But we are allowed to go outside to just take in some exercise.
Yeah, so...
Yeah.
So do that, and we're gonna keep pumping these shows out again, because we ain't got nothing else to do anyway. We got time, and that's it, bro. You got anything to say before we check out?
Hey, y'all go and check on Miss Mary and Mr. Willie and them, and make sure they getting the stuff that they need. If you go,
that's real.
Out,
that's real.
You know, grab me, and you know, listen, man. A lot of them older folks, man, they pride and
gonna let
them ask you. And you know, but if you got elders, in your family,
yeah.
You know, hopefully, you know, you can pay it forward, man, and you know. know, do no contact if need be.
Yeah, just leave it at the door. You know what I'm saying? But yeah, because you know they're gonna try to get the money for it. No. Yeah.
Take this. Know how to fold up some money, boy. That money,
it'll be $75. $75 inside of a quarter. Like Miss May, that's all the 3 20s and a 10.
Yeah. So just check on your folks, man.
Yeah, that's real though. That's very real.
That's gonna be very, very important, man. And that's all I really gotta say.
Yeah. So we're gonna wrap it up, and like I said, we'll come back next week and hopefully be some better news about what's going on, and we'll get into this Insecure premiere and this Clark Sisters movie, which I'm sure is going to explode the internet. I'm sure the white folks are going to be like, who's Twinkie? Yeah, and that's it. And we'll see y'all next week.
Peace.
Later.
And that's what's popping in the world of entertainment. Thank you for listening to the Pop Life Podcast with Jeffrey, Naima, and Sean. Want to be a part of the show? We've got 3 ways you can get involved. Like us on Facebook. Send us your burning questions to poplifepodcast@gmail.com. And follow us on Twitter @PopLifePodcast.